This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Let's hit it. Give me a vacation.
Vacation.
Give me a wave.
Surfing.
Give me a city tour.
The trolley.
Give me animals.
The zoo.
Give me some sea life. Give me museums.
Balboa Park.
Give me a woo.
Roller coaster.
What's that spell?
San Diego.
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your family vacation at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Hello and welcome to Savor, a production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we have an episode for you about malted milk.
Yes, which is another episode I could have sworn up and down we'd already done.
But nope, no burrs. Soda fountains, yes. Mm-hmm. Other kinds of milk, sure.
Right. I believe I've talked about this because every time I think about malted milk, I remember an experience I had with a friend of mine who got offended that I didn't know the difference between a milkshake and a malt.
Okay.
And it was like his heel was like on the pulpit preaching to me like, about how much more amazing malts were, and he was telling me where to get them in Atlanta, and then he disappeared into the night on his motorcycle. So it was just a very vivid memory for me.
Wow, like the malted Avenger. I love this.
Oh, I am sure he would take that mantle on proudly. Was there any particular reason this was on your mind?
It was so long ago, a week or so, that I made this decision. I have no idea. I think I was just kind of malted milk. How does that work? What is that about? Let's look into it.
Well, it does have an interesting history and science behind it.
It certainly does. And it is, I maybe not at the like malted Avenger level, but I do love a malt. Like if I have the opportunity, if someone is like, would you like an egg cream or a malted egg cream? I'm like, malted, obviously. like if the option exists, I will take it every time.
Okay. I don't think I've had one as of yet, as of the Avenger that I interacted with. Even though I live really close to a place he told me to go get one. But I'm sure I would love it. It sounds delicious. I love this kind of thing anyway. Also, for the like two of you that are thinking, wait, it's Life Day, even though you don't know when we're recording this. there will be a Life Day episode. Never fear.
Yes. We have not forgotten.
Oh, I could never.
You literally could not, I don't think.
Even if everyone involved wants me to.
Oh, no,
if you've seen
never.
It, You can't forget it.
the holiday special Annie is talking about, yes, of Star Wars. Yes.
Yes. Uh-huh. I forget. No one, again, only two of you probably are like, wait. but yes, we have done episodes related to this. You can see our episodes on condensed and evaporated milk. Expiration dates. That one always pops up in our milk episodes.
Yep, yep.
We did an episode on milk types. That's kind of related.
Sure. Also, our beer episodes, perhaps especially stouts and porters, and maybe like our scotch interview.
Yeah, I love it. That's a wide range.
Yeah, yeah. yeah, everything from from condensed milk to scotch is good background reading material.
Yes,
or listening material.
Yes. Well, I guess that brings us to our question.
Sure.
Malted milk. What is it?
Well, malted milk is a type of dry powder made from milk and extracts of wheat and barley. The malt comes in because the barley has been malted. That is, it's been germinated and then roasted. This makes the barley develop sugars and adds some, like, sweet, roasty, toasty flavors to the already kind of rich, earthy, bready, caramel, custardy flavors of the milk and the wheat. There's often a little bit of salt in there, too. It can come with other flavorings, like cocoa powder. Malted milk can be mixed with hot or sometimes cold milk to make a simple flavored beverage, but it is also used to sort of like season sweet beverages and desserts, like milkshakes or cookies maybe, adding a depth of flavor. It's a flavor punch-up for sweet and or creamy things. It's like powdered beer minus the funk, add creaminess. It's like a roasty, toasty, powdered creamer. It's like discovering that there's a new color in the spectrum that you've just never noticed before, and it just adds like a little extra dimension to everything it touches.
Aww. It's like the Force.
Yeah. Oh.
Yes, Life Day.
Yeah. Oh, my heck. Okay. All right. So malted milk is an industrially produced product, sort of like Life Day. to make it, manufacturers start by making a sort of like grain soup or tea, I guess, out of malted barley and wheat flour. So, okay, let's talk about malted barley. Like I said a second ago, malted means germinated and dried, meaning that you take a grain and you create an environment where it'll start to germinate. Grains are seeds, right? They contain proteins that code for growing a plant, plus starches to feed that hypothetical growth, all wrapped up in a little starchy portable package, right? So given moisture and a pleasant temperature, a seed of grain will start to grow a plant. One of the very first steps of which is breaking down those starches into sugars for easy processing. So when you malt grains, you're using that natural process to do some work for you, creating sugars. This helps in alcohol production because your fermentation yeasts need to eat sugars in order to make alcohol, but we're stopping at just sugars today, okay? Because you don't want a whole plant, you're going to stop your germination process by drying out the grains in a process called kilning. And kilning is a whole complex, like, science art kind of thing. But very basically, you can dry out the grains either quick and clean or slow and steady. And when you dry them slow, the proteins and the sugars and the grains are going to undergo a couple of reactions, caramelization and the Maillard reaction. These two are at work when you sear a steak or toast bread, you know? In caramelization, sugars decompose in the presence of elevated temperatures, creating all kinds of fun toasty flavor compounds. Think like toffee or butter, like jam, stone fruits, cotton candy, all of those nice flavors that you can get. In the Maillard reaction, amino acids react with sugars, usually at elevated temperatures, to create all kinds of roasty, fun flavor compounds. Think like toast, citrus, currants, chocolate, and coffee. And those flavors can be super fun in like a beer or a whiskey. But why should those drinks have all the fun? So manufacturers take this malted barley and wheat flour, cook it for a little bit in water, and then separate out the solids from the liquid, which is our operative part here. That liquid is then mixed with milk, probably some salt, some baking soda to help balance out the pH, maybe some extra vitamins and minerals, maybe other flavorings like the aforementioned cocoa. And then the whole mix is then vacuum evaporated until you wind up with a solid product that can be ground into a powder and then spray dried, which is forced through like a pressurized spraying system that removes almost all of the remaining moisture. The product is then shelf stable and can be packaged up and will keep for just years, just sitting around. Some formulations of malted milk are made to be dissolvable in cold milk or water, but some have to be made into a hot beverage. It just depends on how they're made. It doesn't really change the texture or like the thickness of the drink, mostly just adds flavor. Like there's a little bit of texture involved. Again, it can depend on the formulation. But yeah, you can also mix malted milk powder into your batter for making ice cream or baked goods or chocolates. Or you can add a scoop of powder to a milkshake or an egg cream that you're mixing up, or even just sprinkle some over an ice cream sundae. It is also used to flavor candies, like a chocolate covered malted milk balls. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. My dad loved those. It always confused me as a kid.
I dislike the texture of those, but I very much enjoy the flavor.
Yeah, I had no problem with them. It was just like, of the things I could have, that was at the bottom.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. What about the nutrition?
Depending on how malted milk is made, it'll have, you know, like a little bit of fat, a little bit of protein, wee little smattering of micronutrients. It can have a bunch of added nutrients. It can have a bunch of added sugar. Again, it depends. If there is a bunch of sugar, it's kind of a treat. Treats are nice. By itself, it's not super nutritious, but I will say that in populations where food scarcity and nutrition are issues, malted milk powder can help increase consumption of milk versus less nutritious drinks like sodas. You know, it makes milk more fun. Doesn't necessarily add too much sugar, so it can be sold as a like health product in that way. But I think it's more getting you to choose something healthier versus it in itself is really healthy.
Right.
Most of the time.
Well, we do have some numbers for you.
Just a couple. I'd say that it's considered pretty old-fashioned here in the United States, but in other areas, it's never, it's like kind of been growing in popularity over the years, and it is still part of daily life in some places. For example, albeit small study that I read out of Malaysia found that some 73% of households serve malted milk to their kids.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And according to some market research, it is coming back in places like the U.S. as well. The global market is estimated to be worth over $12 billion a year by 2027.
Wow. And it has such a fascinating history.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And we are going to get into that as soon as we get back from a quick break for a word from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico.
We've talked in a bunch of different episodes about facets of Puerto Rican cuisine, like the dish mofongo, made of savory, deep-fried mashed plantains studded with some kind of tasty protein, and the creation of the cool, creamy piña colada. But there is so much more there. I've actually never been. You have a tiny bit of experience, don't you?
Yes. Unfortunately, it was a very tiny bit of experience. I was there for about a day. I'm kicking myself for that now. I remember having delicious rums, delicious drinks, but I want to go back because, yeah, so many episodes we do on here, when we're talking about food from Puerto Rico, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds amazing. We're trying to get a Savor team trip together.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, we're trying to get a trip to a lot of places, but this is really top of the list. Even putting together this ad read made me hungry. I was like, oh, I want to try those things. Yeah, as we've talked about before, there are influences there from African and Spanish and native Taino foodways. The culinary scene sounds amazing, and we want to go, and I'm hungry. No passport is required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. You can learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you. Okay, so malt as an ingredient for beer and later whiskeys goes way back. That is an old ingredient. We have talked many times about different technologies that have emerged over the course of the centuries to make the process easier or more complicated, but in fun ways. And so a lot of that was really coming to a head around like the 1700s-ish.
Right. Yes. When it comes to malted milk powder, okay, a lot of things say malted milk powder was invented in 1873. By a British food producer named William Horlick and his brother James Horlick, who's a physician. Now, a lot of things say William. Then you dig a little bit deeper, and a lot of things say James.
Okay.
Also, maybe it was neither of them. More on that later. So I'm just saying they both were involved in some way right here.
Cool.
The original product was a combination of reduced dry whole milk, malted barley extract, and wheat. So Horlick, William, used a vacuum to dry the malt and wheat. Once they'd nailed down the formula for malted milk, the brothers joined forces to open a factory in Chicago, but they eventually moved production to Racine, Wisconsin in 1875. The patent for this product was granted in 1883. There is a lot of drama around that, though. We're going to talk about that.
Uh-huh.
Yes. But yes, at first, this product was intended as a nutritional supplement to be mixed with milk. And specifically, it was meant for infants and people who were sick. As a physician, James had experimented with something like malted milk in London before the brothers moved to the U.S. By the 19th century, doctors knew that malt was easy to digest, but the liquid form presented some problems, mainly that it fermented over time. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people have been trying to invent a dry, stable, powdered malt for years, and James was a part of that group. So once they had done this, the brothers first marketed the product as Diastoid, which I think is fun, but a lot of things I read was like, a disastrous name. So they did soon change the name to Malted Milk, which is a term they trademarked in 1887. And it was pretty popular, and not just as a convenient but tasty health product. People would often add a scoop to their milk to boost the nutrition of the milk. However, there was a problem, and it was the milk, because, as we've discussed, pre-refrigeration and pasteurization, spoiled milk commonly carried diseases. It made people sick, especially children. Mm-hmm. So Horlick wanted to create a version that didn't need to be mixed with milk. And by 1881, again, this is generally credited to William. But if James is the physician, I'm kind of confused. But anyway, either way, one of them found a way to dry the milk along with the malt and wheat. so that it could be mixed with water. And yeah, physicians and dentists prescribed it to patients. It was advertised for all kinds of things like flu prevention, a digestive aid, a sleep aid if you had it before bed, and just general health boost that it could grant. Explorers often carried it with them on their journeys, including to places like the Himalayas and the North Pole. It was lightweight, it was calorie packed, and imperishable, making it perfect for intense travel. And because of the taste and convenience, soldiers often carried it with them too. And many athletes incorporated it into their diets and were outspoken about mm-hmm. how much they loved it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And yes, many explorers did take malted milk on their expeditions, including Richard Byrd, who named a mountain range in Antarctica after the Horlick Company. And a little bit more on that later. But yes. Oh. But outside of that, people did enjoy drinking it for the taste alone. And soda fountains began offering it, plain or later mixed with ice cream. Seeing an opportunity, Horlicks started adding chocolate to some of their products, and the resulting product was really popular.
Oh, yeah, like wildly popular. Like by 1916, various companies in the U.S. were producing some 11 million pounds of malted milk every year. But by 1930, that had doubled.
Whew. And malt shops began opening across the country where they sold malts or malteds. And malted milk did get a boost during the temperance movement and prohibition, when soda fountains grew in popularity as folks were looking for an alternative to alcohol. And yes, you can see our soda episode on that.
Right. These were soda fountains, but they were called malt shops because of the popularity of this one product. But yeah, like during Prohibition, Coors, the beer company, switched over to making malted milk because they had the equipment to make, you know, malted barley. They wound up scoring a contract with the Mars Candy Company, and this might be the reason that Coors survived Prohibition. They did stop making malted milk in 1957, though. Walgreens likes to say that one of their soda fountain employees, one Ivar Pop Colson, invented the chocolate malted milkshake in 1922. That's, you know, one of those things. I strongly suspect that if soda jerks had ice cream and they had malt and they had chocolate syrup, I don't know. I wasn't there. Couldn't tell you.
Seems like a natural coming together of things.
Sure.
I did read in the 1930s and 40s that these malted drinks were most likely more foamy than we would be accustomed to, but they shifted to something more semi-frozen in the 1950s, probably with more refrigeration available.
Yeah. And that also does line up with like the proliferation of electric blenders around the same time. So...
Yes. I read that there's a museum exhibit that has, is it Hamilton Beach, also in Racine?
Has
very specific blenders that were branded with Horlick's logo.
Oh, wow.
So, yes. Brief malted milk balls aside, because malted milk was not limited to drinks.
Yep. In 1929, Nestle patented an extremely specific process for making small balls out of malted milk by like processing the malted milk mixture into a sort of taffy and then drying it out. I've read other specific patents that use a totally different process, and it's so cool. I'm like, yeah, weirdos.
That is cool. Yeah, you weirdos, get it. In 1936, a company in England called Forest Malt created a milk cover malt candy called Maltesers, which is fun. A similar candy called Giants was first introduced in the U.S. in 1939. It was produced by the Overland Candy Company, and a decade later, they changed the name of that candy to Whoppers.
There you go.
My dad was a Milk Duds person.
Milk Duds is totally different.
I'm realizing the truth of this. He did like Whoppers, though.
Okay.
But he preferred the Milk Duds. And I both were in the same category in my child brain. I was like, no, thanks.
Yeah. Milk Duds are more like a caramel kind of situation, like a chocolate
caramel. Oh, well, no wonder. Anyway. Okay. Let's get into some legal drama.
Yes.
Okay. So when Horlick's patent ran out in 1900, other companies started producing malted milk, and Horlick's really didn't like this. And they sued one of the companies doing this, the Elgin Milkine Company. I believe that's the English pronunciation. So hopefully it's close.
Cool.
But the court ruled in favor of the defendant since the name malted milk was used in the patent, which was now open to the public.
Yes.
Further, the product didn't even have to be produced in the manner described in the patent to be called malted milk, was something they ruled. And companies like Borden and Carnation took that ruling and ran with it. Horlick tried to re-register the patent, or at least add a disclaimer that might keep the patent alive in other countries, but didn't succeed. It was like a really funny, dry read where the people on the legal people were like, "This has never been done before." They were like, "Well, please do it now." And they're like, "No."
They're like, "We cannot. Sorry."
And there was so much trauma around this. Borden sued Horlick's in 1913, alleging that they had engaged in an intense smear campaign against Borden, despite losing the previous lawsuit, claiming that Horlick's were claiming that they were the true and original product, the only, like, the real one, and that Horlick had pressured druggists to not use Borden, even going so far as to remove items associated with Borden, like receptacles and dispensers for their products.
Wow. Huh.
Which, the very tongue-in-cheek article I read about this was like, he admitted to the first part. But also, Borden tried to prove that Horlick wasn't the original inventor at all.
Oh.
Yeah, they claimed that in the suit with Elgin, Elgin had alleged that a German chemist named von Liebig was the true originator of the process behind malted milk. And they referenced testimony in which William Horlick said he didn't invent it at all. Even further, the British High Court of Justice had annulled Horlick's patent earlier because the complainant in the case alleged that Horlick got the patent for processing malted milk from them.
Oh.
The British patent was almost the same as the American patent. So with all of this, Borden was arguing that the marketing campaign that was loudly proclaiming that they were the first, the original, the only genuine malted milk, wasn't true. However, ultimately, the suit was dismissed due to lack of proof.
Oh.
Yeah. Ooh, but they didn't end there. I'll say that. They were still mad. but that's kind of the high point of it.
One small note I will say that the von Liebig was definitely like he was a chemist who was working in a lot of processes like malt roasting and drying, vaguely involved, perhaps not like, yeah, maybe not malted milk.
Right.
But the malting process was something that he was involved with. So, sure. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. We'll maybe never know.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to throw in a couple of random Ovaltine facts, because Ovaltine is not the same as malted milk.
I think that they do make a malted milk product.
They do.
Okay.
They do. But I was just reading about all of this drama. And then I ran across these articles about Ovaltine, and my little random fact brain was engaged. Because I remembered in A Christmas Story, that's a famous, when Ralphie's like trying to use his decoder to listen to this radio station and get the little Orphan Annie message, it ends up being, "Be sure to drink your Ovaltine." And he feels so betrayed and comes out like a wiser person about capitalism. But it just made me think of like this, all of this health part of it.
Yeah.
And sort of that kind of how it feels old-fashioned a bit in the U.S. Then there is a Jerry Seinfeld joke. The mug is round. The jar is round. Why don't they call it round teen? And I wasn't even looking for this, listeners, I swear. But I found an article about it from Mother Jones that went into, like, is this joke true at all? It was originally called Ovomaltine, for eggs. Ovo, the Latin word for eggs, and malt for malt, which were the two primary ingredients. So,
wow,
the joke doesn't work.
Wow. All right. Yeah. Yeah. Upcoming Ovaltine episode, I suppose.
Oh, I would love it. I did research it, and it has a lot of fun. That's why I was like, okay, stop researching this. You're taking too much time. Because it does have a fun, interesting history. But back to malted milk.
Okay.
Horlick's malted milk tablets were frequently included in children's and workers' lunches during the Great Depression in the 1930s and for decades after. Many kept an emergency stock of these in their homes. Malted milk certainly made both Horlick brothers rich. James moved back to London. William stayed in Racine, and he did donate a lot of his fortune to a school. There's a hospital, a park, the Boy Scouts. And he was one of the many backers of a Scandinavian expedition to the South Pole. The King of Norway gave him the Order of St. Olaf because of his contributions, and he was the first American to ever receive that. And yes, the Horlick Mountains, as I said earlier.
Well,
he has a mountain range named after him. Are the product. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Horlick factory in Racine closed in 1975. Obviously, it's still getting made, but that factory in particular closed in 1975. Yep. But this was a fun... I didn't realize that I was going to be reading about one product that had such a big impact that would have, like, a mountain range named after
it. Right? I mean, but also patent drama. Like, I know how much you love a good dry patent drama read, so.
I do. I was reading that, like legal document, like, wow, riveted. Because I think I found that a bit later in my research. Most of the things were just like, yeah, the Horlick brothers, one of them invented it. And then I found this one document and was like, no, they didn't. And it opened up all this, like, other alleys for me to go down. Like, ooh. patent drama. Okay.
Heck yeah.
Yeah. So, yes, I think that's what we have to say about malted milk for now.
It is. Of course, if y'all have any personal associations, stories, recipes, we would love to hear about it.
Yes. But in the meantime, we do already have some listener mail for you.
And we will get into that as soon as we get back from one more. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico.
We've talked in a bunch of different episodes about facets of Puerto Rican cuisine, like the dish mofongo, made of savory, deep-fried mashed plantains studded with some kind of tasty protein, and the creation of the cool, creamy piña colada. But there is so much more there. I've actually never been. You have a tiny bit of experience, don't you?
Yes. Unfortunately, it was a very tiny bit of experience. I was there for about a day. I'm kicking myself for that now. I remember having delicious rums, delicious drinks, but I want to go back because, yeah, so many episodes we do on here, when we're talking about food from Puerto Rico, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds amazing. We're trying to get a savor team trip
together. Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, we're trying to get a trip to a lot of places, but this is really top of the list. Even putting together this ad read made me hungry. I was like, oh, I want to try those things.
Yeah, as we've talked about before, there are influences there from African and Spanish and native Taino foodways. The culinary scene sounds amazing, and we want to go, and I'm hungry. No passport is required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. You can learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.
Quick break for a word from our sponsors.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with Listener Mail. Patent drama. In the Antarctic.
In the mountains of madness. Yes. Love it.
Yes. So today we are going to split up a letter that we received from Joe. We always love receiving long letters.
Oh, yeah.
Limit yourself at all.
Yeah, no, no.
Yes. But Joe wrote, "Happy fall. I was listening to one of your episodes in the kitchen while I was cooking, as I usually do, when my brother wandered in to help. After a moment, he commented that either I talk like you or you talk like me, which I thought was hilarious. Do you know that there is a linguistic phenomenon called entrainment? It's when two or more speakers subconsciously start to adjust to one another's language practices." Entrainment in action. But onwards to water chestnuts. The Philippines has many variations of lumpia, and this is a variation of lumpiang sariwa, which is wrapped in a fresh wrapper and is a personal favorite. And there's a link enclosed. In grad school, my roommates entered a cooking contest hosted by our college where we did our take on a British roast dinner. We all came from different parts of the world and contributed a traditional dish as an element of the roast dinner, and mine was lumpiang hubad. Oh, I'm so sorry if I'm mispronouncing that. I made mine vegetarian because we had two meat entrees already. Lumpiang hubad usually calls for jicama, but I couldn't find it, so I figured canned water chestnuts were a similar enough textural substitute. We practiced our entry for an entire weekend and ended up winning the International Taste Prize. Aww. We were so proud. Here is a link to the more traditional recipe as well as my variation. I hope you try both.
Okay, Joe continues. The Panta Muerto episode was such a coincidence. On November 2nd, I attended a colleague's talk on their sabbatical research, which looked at the cultural and ecological significance of monarch butterflies. They mentioned all the same things you did about monarch butterfly migrations, as well as the belief associated with their return to Mexico. They even served Panta Muerto, which I'd never tried before. I loved it, and will definitely look for the fancier variations at the Mexican bakeries near me next year. And then, we're going to go through the lumpiang hubad recipe. Okay, yeah? All right. Ingredients. 1 can of water chestnuts, sliced. 1 can of bamboo shoots. 1 carrot julienned. 1 sweet potato julienned. 1/2 a large head of cabbage, shredded. 1 tomato chopped. Large onion, sliced. 3 to 4 garlic cloves, minced. 2 tablespoons of fish sauce, salt and pepper. Okay, recipe. Sauté the onions, garlic, and tomato in a little oil until soft and translucent. Add the sweet potatoes and carrots and cook for about 3 minutes or until the sweet potatoes are slightly crisp. Add the water chestnuts and bamboo, then season with the fish sauce, salt, and pepper. Cook for another minute or two. It won't take long for either of them to cook. Add the cabbage last. Lower the heat and cook it until slightly wilted and bright green in color. Turn off the heat. Serve with the sauce from the lumpiang sariwa recipe or mang tomas. I don't know. Or even hoisin sauce. P.S. If anyone did want the hot chocolate or champurrado recipes I sent you, please feel free to share them. I hope you've been enjoying the tableya. Yes, because they did send some tableya to both of us, and Annie did give me mine.
I did.
She did not hoard it all. Thank you.
No. Would never. Too suspicious, superstitious for that kind of thing.
and it is delicious. Oh, it makes a really, really, really nice hot chocolate. Oh, my goodness.
Yes. I'm very excited. As we're moving into, like, cooler times, holiday times, to experiment.
Yeah.
With it.
We did have a really good cold snap a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And so I definitely I was like, yes, this is what is happening. And it's really lovely.
Yes. And this recipe sounds great too.
Yeah.
Truly, you listeners, I don't know if you appreciate how much we love when you send recipes. And there are some that some of you have sent in that I make like pretty consistently. Aww. So thank you for doing that. Sounds
That's
so good.
Awesome. Yeah. I don't think I've had the specific type of lumpia, but mm-hmm. I do. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Just yes. Yes. The answer is yes.
Well, it's really funny because also when I was reading this, I've never heard of entrainment. That makes so much sense to me though.
Oh,
I
yeah.
I catch myself doing that sometimes. I mean, there's kind of a running joke, especially with my friends in the South, where, like, if you talk to your Southern family, all of a sudden this accent comes out you did not know was lying in wait.
Yep.
So that, I mean, that definitely makes sense to me. But thank you for teaching. I didn't know about that, so thank you.
Yeah, that is a fun thing. Like, I notice us doing it sometimes. Like, especially, there is one time when a nice wait staff human came up to take our order at a restaurant and they were like, "How you guys doing?" And we said simultaneously in exactly the same tone, "Good, how are you?"
Yes. Yep.
And I felt like we were the creepy twins from The Shining. Yes. For just a second. But
I did too. I'm glad we were on the same mindset about that. Yeah. Not in a bad way necessarily, but
no. Huh. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much to Joe for writing in. If you would like to write to us, we would love to hear from you. You can email us at hello@savorpod.com.
We are also hypothetically on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @SavorPod, and we do hope to hear from you. Savor is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.